Hey, Stu.
Tom.
Tactical Fitness Report with Stu Smith, Podcast 12, Adventure Racing Prep.
Oh, yeah, this is a fun one. I like this one. This was a good article. People like
it. So you had a question here. I'm going to read this question from one of your readers. I'm a team captain of an adventure race team that is competing in a 24-hour race to raise money for programs that support veterans. It's a great cause.
Yeah.
The race is over 24 hours. Off-road involves map and compass navigation and canoeing, rucking, mountain biking. Is there any specific training program you would recommend to be as effective as possible with training my team?
I think any training program, as long as you're working out, obviously will help you. But once again, just like we talked about in podcast 11 about specifics, you need to get specific with what you are about to attempt. Like some of these things you just can't replicate, you know, doing weights in the weight room, right? You need to get out in the woods, take your team out for a weekend hike and camping trip. You know, I'm not sure where you guys are, but, you know, the Appalachian Trail for, you know, 40 miles, you know, would be a great, you know, thing to do prior to getting out there. And especially if you're not used to the wilderness, you know, and the wilderness at night, those are big eye openers. You know, the last thing you want is anybody on your team to have never been out in the woods by themselves or even with a team at night for the first time. Yes. Because it's, you hear everything and you think everything is coming at you and going to eat you. I mean, it is a big boogeyman feeling when you're out there, right? So getting used to that and realizing that that's not the case, you know, is a big mental part of the game, right? So, you know, getting used to the wilderness, get out there, camp, hike, map and compass. There's no fun being lost on a 24-hour race, you know, when you know you have certain time hacks to meet at certain distances. There's no fun being lost, you know, when you're out there, and especially you get lost at night, you know, forget about it. You've lost, you know, several hours just to find your way back, you know, until daylight again.
Yeah. The thing that struck me is I hear a nightmare scenario, right? Night, map and compass navigation, canoeing, which means water, and mountain biking. This could get really interesting.
Oh, get horrible.
What happens absolutely. When, right?
Absolutely horrible. And you make sure you have good lights. Make sure your lights work. You know, luckily you're not trying to hide from anybody at the same time. So you can just have big bright lights and, you know, but you got to remember too, anytime you turn on that light, you're going to lose your night vision.
Yeah.
So it's either leave them on all time or, you know, dim them a little bit so you can still have your night vision. Another little trick too, this is always a fun trip. If you do turn on a light, close one eye. Mm-hmm. Right. So you turn on a light and you go like this, right? And then you turn it off. Well, you can't see, but if you do this, now you can see because that one didn't lose all its night vision. I do this all the time when I'm waking up middle of the night to go use the bathroom. Right. And, you know, so I'll turn on the light, close one eye, you know, right? Walk back into my room with the other eye. You know, when you're shooting and you got a big muzzle flash on the back, sometimes you got to do the same thing like that way. Pilots even do it when they're shooting missiles at night. You know, they close their eyes as soon as they shoot that missile just so they don't – or they close one eye so they don't, you know, lose their night vision. So, yeah, night vision is a big one to lose at you know, when you're at night in the wilderness, and if you – it takes a good 30 minutes for you to get it back.
Yeah, the other thing that I would like to be able to know about or control is the weather that day. And also the moon phase and the cloud cover.
Yeah.
Because it can be a big deal on whether you're in, if you've got the cover of a vegetation or not, right? Because all these things make it matter when in your ability to function.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I don't know if this is a winter event, if it's a summer event. Hopefully it's spring or fall, whether it's kind of moderate temperatures. But regardless, you know, you need to prepare for what season it is, with the type of clothes you wear, how much water you bring. Typically, you need to bring a lot of water anyway, because it's, if it's not humid and hot, it's probably arid and dry, and you still sweat, but it just evaporates. You just don't know it. And actually dehydration comes even faster. You know, and you'll see it in chapped lips. So you need, you know, you need to bring lipstick and sun balm and, you know, all those little pieces of equipment that are going to get you through that 24-hour event. And hopefully you can stay awake for all 24 hours and actually be moving. I mean, that I would assume that's the goal of this challenge. So you need to practice, you know, long days of being on your feet and moving as well. And still being able to think, you know, when you're moving around that much, you know, your ability to think is critical. And if you don't have enough food and fuel in your body, you know, your brain starts shutting down. Your brain's going to really eat up a lot of carbohydrates. So, you know, find out what food works for you, and you'll have a little more energy today, either to help cool you down or fuel you up so you're warm if it's really cold too. So, yeah, I know we're going to get into fitness and nutrition here in the next little segment of this answer to this question, but you know, it is real important to, you know, practice all of those things in the woods, find out what works for you, what doesn't. If your boots don't fit, you know, you need an extra pair of socks, you know, all those little things that can make a difference in your 24-hour race. You know, you need to go practice them.
Yes. And just beyond the environmentals, so time of year, moon phase, weather, cloud cover, you know, type of terrain you're in. The one thing that strikes me in is that you're always safer being fully clothed. Because if you're 24 hours in, you've got potentially the sun beating down on you on a 90-degree day, sunburn, more dehydration than you would if your skin exposed. And then your ability to be able to hit the ground and rest for a few minutes and not have that skin be exposed to the ground that may have a little bit of sunburn on it. So those of us that have dealt a lot in the sun, and I know a lot of you that listen to this or read this or hear this do, know that you're safer fully clothed for a 24-hour event than you are wearing shorts and a t-shirt.
Yeah, I mean, just plus, I mean, you never know what critters are out there, as well as, you know, bushes that are, you know, cause rashes, things like that. So there's some things that, you know, a little bit of clothing will definitely protect you from.
Absolutely. So there's a whole issue here, Stu, that we're not going to go too deeply on other than what we have for the first 10 minutes of this, which is right on, you've really got to do a lot of work around the environmentals of what you're dealing with over that 24-hour period, temperature change, weather, the whole routine, and making sure you have the right equipment and that you've practiced in that environment.
Yes.
But then it gets down to the actual fitness and nutrition aspect of, okay, now you're beyond the environmentals and you've thought your way through every hour of that 24-hour period from an environmental point of view. Now you're into, okay, how do I prepare physically for this, and how do I make sure that I have the proper nutrition and hydration during this 24-hour period?
Yeah, you know, I would compare it to basically like an Army Ranger type training program where you obviously have to carry your gear, right? Which you would have a lot of gear to carry if you're canoeing, if you are eating, you know, in this 24-hour period, all the water. I mean, all the water alone is probably going to take you, you know, 15 pounds, you know, added water. So yeah, you got to get, you know, used to the load bearing. So, you know, weight room workouts, squats, deadlifts, you know, hang cleans, anything that's working that core, that lower back plan that we have is ideal for just helping you build that stability in your lower back and upper back when you're carrying backpacks. You know, I don't know how much climbing, you might be doing some mountain climbing too. So grip work is pretty important. And just knowing the knots that you would need to do some of these things. I would suggest biking. I would suggest, you know, almost like doing a triathlon type workout too, because you got biking to do, you have leg workouts you need to do, because, you know, mountain biking means uphills a lot and downhills a lot. So got to practice, you know, riding on a trail, which I'm sure that's probably some of the event would be biking on a trail, which is, can be treacherous. But yeah, you can you can replicate some of that in the weight room, you know, definitely with weights, barbells, dumbbells, kettlebells, you know, stationary bikes and treadmills with backpacks on. We do something we call Weight Vest Wednesday, where, you know, I think that'd be a good drill for somebody, like whatever you're doing that day, you're just wearing a weight vest the whole time. Might just be calisthenics, might be walking on a treadmill, might be riding a bike, but you're carrying gear, simulating carrying gear the entire time, you know, make that a real long workout. But you can't do any of this without fuel, and your nutrition is critical, and you need to find out what works best for you in these situations by putting yourself in these situations. Where people screw up all the time is they see, oh, this is for guys who run marathons, and this is a guy who does adventure racing, and it's like this pack of goo or whatever, right, that's full of carbohydrates and sugar, which is great. You need that. But I've seen guys take it and then get sick 10 minutes later. They've never taken it before, in their middle of a race, right? And they just throw up for a couple miles, and they got nothing in their belly. You know, so make sure you know what fits you and your body and what works well. So throughout the day when you're working out, you had one of the best workouts ever. You had a couple of bananas, maybe an orange or something, some protein shake on the back end. You know, whatever that is that works for you, make it work for you on the competition as well. Just don't try something new for the first time ever, right? You know, beef jerky is a great light protein source. You know, peanuts, great source. I always carried, you know, some easy fruit like an apple or a couple apples with me if I needed sugar. You know, small candies even if you need sugar. I used to chew bubble gum, you know, that had sugar in it, and you know, just to get, you know, keep my lips moist and my mouth moist. But it got a few grams of sugar in your body when you think you need it. And you know, the little things like that can help a lot. In fact, there's this an article I wrote called the ABDs of nutrition, mm-hmm. where it stands for after, before, and during your workout, what do you need to eat? You need to really take a look at the before and during part, you know, of a 24-hour race, you know, what you need to eat, because there's hydration issues or electrolyte issues. There's protein, carbs, fats, you know, depending on what type of body that you have. You know, if you're a fat burner, you know, a lot of guys are fat burners with low carb diets. You know, if that works for you, make sure that's what you have out there, right? If you're a carb burner, right, and you like to carb up before big workouts and races, you know, make sure you're carbed up and you have plenty of carbs for yourself, you know, during this trip. You know,
I like that phrase, Stu. I like that phrase of carbing up. You know, I love carbing up. Nothing more fun than carbing up.
You know, I probably decreased my carbs significantly as I've aged, you know, but you know, if you're younger, you know, and you're a carb burner, go for it. You know, there's your brain works off of carbs. I have found that, you know, since, you know, especially if you're in a high stress situation or a situation like this where you need to think and be able to communicate, and not only communicate, but hear, you know, you're speaking and listening at the same time, you know, following directions and, you know, ideas, and you got to get creative to get through certain places. You know, your brain needs to work optimally, and your brain works off glycogen, you know, which is just your body's, you know, what it does when it has carbohydrates. So, yeah, you need carbohydrates too. Don't neglect them.
You know, Stu, one of the things that strikes me about this is getting ready for an event that is 24 hours long, and you and I both have the same reaction to this, right? This sounds like more of a 24-hour op than it does just a fun thing for a bunch of people to go do for 24 hours, right? But if you were going to do this, let me ask the question this way. If you and I said, all right, we're going to do what this fellow is going to do with his team, how long ahead of time would we start the training?
That's a good question. I think that, one, like, you need to be already in shape if you're considering this. You know, if you need to also get in shape, you need to give yourself another 4 to 6 months of getting in shape, and then start the whole process of you know, specifically training for this event. Right? Now you can always do map and compass and, you know, practice those little mm-hmm. skills like that, but putting it all together on a week long, a weekend camping trip or something, you know, where you are actually out roughing it and moving in the woods and different variety of environments, which I'm sure in a 24-hour period, if you got a canoe and mountain bike, you're going to see different types of environments in this journey. You know, that could take you another 4 to 6 months.
Exactly.
This is something that you don't want to do on a whim, in other
words. Yes. So you're probably talking 6 months minimum, maybe a year to work sure, make sure you're doing this. So to me, this looks like a much more complicated marathon-like training, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you already have the experience of doing things like this and you know what to carry in your backpack, you know what to eat, you're a great mountain biker, you know map and compass, obviously the timeline can shorten significantly. You know, if you've done this before, obviously you have a skill set that, you know, you might be able to be the teacher to some of the people while they're out there and you can speed up this timeline. But if you're fairly novice in any of these events, it's going to take you a good quarter to, you know, 2 quarters of the year to really prepare and be able to hang and finish. Cause I'm sure that's what you want to do when you sign up for these things is finish. You don't want to be too weak to not finish. You don't want to be too slow to not finish, you know, those type of things, or not have a good solid foundation of fitness and you just fall apart and break, you know, halfway through too.
Well, and you and I both know what you also don't want is a bunch of people that have been hurt in the middle of the night and you now have to figure out how you deal with that.
Yeah.
Right. So Stu, if you're the leader of this group, how would you think about the skills that you would need specifically as the leader and what you would use to lead this group?
Well, I do a variety of things. Get the group together, you know, do things together so you're starting to work as a team. You know, one of the events we do here is we run this endurance course, you know, that's kind of like our own little Spartan race almost. And we do it with a stretcher or we do it with all our gear on. And it becomes, you know, a team event. You're only as fast as your slowest person. So one, you get an idea who the slowest person is, and you might be able to send that guy a few more workouts he can do to, you know, speed things up over the next few months, you know, to work on that weakness. And I think, you know, getting out, finding out where your weaknesses are key. You know, maybe taking a course on, you know, land navigation, you know, from somebody, you know, locally, or even, you know, have some Boy Scout show you, how to do it, you know, start fires if you need it, you know, those little type of survival skills that come in very handy. But typically, you know, get in the weight room at least an hour a day, you know, and then on top of that, put in a lot of cardio, a lot of running, a lot of walking, you know, biking, obviously. And if you can get some canoe work in there, that's critical, because if you don't go in a straight line in a canoe, or you tip over a little bit too much. I mean, there's some skill sets in there that are critical to your ability to just canoe a straight line.
Well, and riding it in the water if it's been swamped. I mean,
do people get
panicky if they've been swamped, right? I mean, there's so many things.
That's a class in itself right there. You need to learn how to do that. You know, so yeah, there's a lot of specifics in this that I would not feel comfortable going into this race until we have kind of gone over everything that could go wrong and at least have a plan for it.
And
you got to have contingencies for your contingencies.
And having the people go through it going wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause when it goes wrong, it doesn't fall apart, right? Just because it goes wrong. And if you have a contingency for it, you pick up and keep on going. You know, you don't have to cry about something going wrong and you're done. You know, you got plan B. Let's keep rolling, you know? So, you know, I think that's, you know, like you and I think, you know, mission thinking, you know, I think that would be critical depending on who you have on your team. If you have, you know, a bunch of former military guys or, you know, spec ops guys, you know, that can do this stuff, that's a little bit different world. You know, if you have people that aren't hunters or fishermen or, you know, outdoorsmen, you know, they're people from middle of the city, you know, it could be a big challenge for you. And, you know, especially if they've never gone through, you know, some of these things, you know, I would definitely get an Eagle Scout. I would recruit an Eagle Scout. I love those guys. Those guys can, when I was in the Navy, you know, doing all of our stuff, I always made sure I knew who the Eagle Scouts were.
Yeah.
Right. Cause they just help the little things that they know make things a little bit easier.
Absolutely. You know, and that's the thing that strikes me about this, Stu. If I were this fellow, I would go look for folks like that, Eagle Scouts, a couple of folks with Ranger tabs, maybe, right? Yeah. Go get yourself a paramedic. Make sure you have one of those folks on the team.
Genius.
And meaning people that, because plenty of those folks are physically oriented, right? Yeah. So it's, you know, and find and put together a team much like you would put together a spec ops team.
Yeah.
And say, what kind of skills do I need to have with me? And think about it that way, because people that have that kind of experience, and we don't know, this fellow might have that kind of experience, his background, right? And probably does from this, but I think what you and I are trying to say is more, if you don't have that background and you haven't done this yourself, in whatever capacity, seek out someone who has, so that they can help you think through these things. I mean, for example, one of the workouts you and I do, and you've had me do for years, is a Spartan thing, right? So every few hundred feet or every mile you do push-ups and sit-ups and, you know, whatever. Well, if you're doing this thing in Arizona, I don't care if it's in the desert, in the middle of the day, you sure as heck better be doing it with mechanics gloves on, because otherwise you'll burn your palms about 10 push-ups right? So learning those kind of, and that's a piece of equipment, by the way, I would have everybody wear as a pair of mechanics gloves, right?
Oh, absolutely.
But it's just that kind of thing that people who have done this stuff at that level, it would strike me that recruiting a handful of those people to your team to help those that haven't, and then it also strikes me, and you and I were talking about this actually earlier, I would treat this much like a marathon. You know what you have to do. You know you have to go run 26 miles. You know you have to run it at this time of day in this kind of weather. All right. A month before, you go out and run 20 miles in that exact environment so that you see what it's like and you see how your body reacts. You see what doesn't work. You see what does work. But you have a month to prepare and fix the things and recover in case you skinned yourself up or you hurt your feet or whatever.
Absolutely.
You have time to recover during that period and still be able to do the race. So,
yeah, I see it like a triathlon. You know, you got a canoe, you got ruck, and you got mountain biking. You know, that should be a major emphasis of your training. You know, if you don't have a canoe, you should be pulling on something that looks like you're rowing a boat. You know, balance. You know, working on your balance. You know, rucking with weight. You know, working on your leg strength and all that stuff. And then, you know, mountain biking, once again, you know, straight up a hill with a mountain bike. That's hard. You might even have to walk and carry the mountain bike. So you need to figure out how to do that. So many different variables that go into a 24-hour racing event. It's hard to answer it with a 600-word article. So I'm glad we were able to chat about it, because,
and, you know,
we're at least get them thinking. If you're gonna do one of these things, you need to be ready, and you don't want to do it on a whim.
No, that is for sure. Stuart, is there any parting advice other than what we have talked about? You know, are there any specific skills that we haven't talked about that you need to make sure you have? I mean, other than the fact that go recruit yourself a paramedic, or go recruit yourself someone who's got a Ranger tab or who's done spec ops or who's been an Eagle Scout. Is there any other piece of advice here you'd give?
You know what? I'd say practice. You know, like you do that, you know, 20-mile run of a mm-hmm. month before a marathon, go out and do a 12, 18-hour event over the weekend, you know, where you're constantly moving. There's no camping to it at all. You are walking, you are canoeing, you're mountain biking, you know, all those things, you know, put it all together just to get some of the specifics down, you know, so you know, how much you need to hydrate, you know, how much you need to eat to, you know, to be able to do a 2-hour mountain bike, you know, how hungry you're going to be on the back end of that, you know, and what works for you. You know, you, if you got to do a canoe right after a mountain bike and you get seasick, you might not want to eat that much. You know, I don't know. You know, there, I doubt many people get seasick rowing a boat or a canoe, but maybe you will, you know, if you're not used to it. So there are little things like that as well that can help you. You might need some Dramamine if you do get motion sick. You know, so like I said, you got to get out and practice.
Absolutely. And I know that's not what this person wanted to hear, right? They didn't want to hear us for the last 25 minutes tell them all the things that can go wrong and what you need, right? They just want to say, hey, I want to get a bunch of people together and we'll go do this for veterans and go out there. The problem is that you and I look at this and we say, just like I guarantee you that the first responders are sitting here hearing the same thing going, oh my God, you know, we better stage up here, because the things that can go wrong, and even the thing about, there's a distinct reason why I said 1 month. Because the moon phase, and because you're half of this thing's going to be done in the darkness, or hopefully not half, depending on the time of year. But there's so many things here. It could be really fun if you spent a year training for this with a group of people, with the right people helping you. That could be enormously fun. The problem is, if it's done without that kind of preparation, it could be you could have some outcomes you really don't want.
Right. And just forethought a week ahead of time, you know, you need to be, weather reports aren't 100% accurate, obviously, but you need to be prepared for what might come, what is thought to be coming. And then maybe even just the opposite of that, because it always happens depending on where in the world you are. I won't ever forget. I was in Colorado once and went to a restaurant, went in the restaurant. And I came back out and there was like 8 inches of snow on my car.
Oh my
like
gosh.
Over like no time whatsoever. I've never seen that. I didn't even know it was snowing. You know, so it's crazy that, weather can change real quick depending on where you are in the world. And you need to, you know, maybe get some intel on where you're going to be and type of weather it is year round there.
So Stu, other than the fact that you and I have now spent 27 minutes discouraging this poor team, what would you, I'm not going to apologize for that, because I think that this is a big deal, but there are people that would like to do this, and how would they get involved here, Stu, and how could they benefit from what you've done and you've written about?
You know what? We like to do these things. You know, we do types of races. A lot of times they are, you know, 12-hour events or long.
You did one last weekend, didn't you?
Yes. Yeah. Well, it was only 3 hours long, but it was a good event. It was a run. It was a swim. It was a ruck. You know, but it was a 3.5-4 hour event that, you know, that's good preparation for what you're trying to do. You know, obviously you don't have to run fast and you don't have to swim fast in a 24-hour period. You want to go in a nice steady pace, but you know, I think you need to learn your pace too, you know, for that. So we do some races that are longer. We go out and hike the Appalachian Trail, which is not far from here, and, you know, just get people used to the outdoors, you know, camping out, being cold, being hot, you know, dealing with, you know, mosquitoes. You know, all the little things that, you know, come with, you know, being outdoors, you know, it does help to practice. And I think, you know, find a way to practice it. That's all I'm saying. You know, even if you gotta,
Steve, we could use the test that they do in for young people in Arizona. Just drive them out in the middle of the desert with your Jeep and just turn them loose and see if they come home.
Wow. That's pretty ballsy.
No, we don't do that, but
yeah, that would be good though.
But there's some value in doing that. All right, bud. Well, we are out of time. This is Tactical Fitness Report with Stu Smith, podcast 12, Adventure Racing Prep. And we apologize if we discouraged you.
I think that's motivation, Tom.
Good.
You know, you gotta be prepared. You gotta prepare for it and have a contingency. So, you know, that's what this is all about. So,
all right, pal.
But thank you, Tom, for
good to see you, pal.
Putting this on, and we will see you on the next podcast.
Later.